This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
If you think about it, it's sort of like, why are certain electronics companies successful? Why has Apple been successful? They weren't the first to make an MP3 player, but maybe they made it sexier or easier to use. And so, you know, I think in the same way, we're taking these kinds of solar cells and really making them very aesthetically pleasing because you don't even necessarily know that they're there. And so clarity and transparency are actually very key criteria. And so it's a very different approach that we really took. We built that in from the ground up.
Imagine a world where every window-laden skyscraper generates its own solar power, where the skylights in your ceiling are a source of light and electricity, and where your iPhone charges itself through the power of the sun. What could make this imagined world possible? Photovoltaic solar cells that are as transparent as regular glass. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Richard Lunt, the lead researcher on the MIT team that developed the technology, an assistant professor at Michigan State University, and co-founder of Ubiquitous Energy, the commercial enterprise through which this energy-capturing glassy film will be distributed. We talk about the science behind what they call a transparent luminescent solar concentrator, and the opportunities ahead with applications ranging from power-generating car and building windows to use on every device you can think of, from smartphones to store signs. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Dr. Richard Lunt, who's a professor of chemical engineering and material science at Michigan State University.
Thank you for having me, Alex. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you and your colleagues at Michigan State have been developing transparent solar cells. Why don't you first tell us how this concept began, if you can?
Sure. So there are a couple answers to that question. The first thing is, you know, I grew up around a big city. I grew up just outside of Boston. And when you walk around a city like Boston or any big city, you start to look at the buildings and you look at all the area there is in the vertical footprint and how much glass there is. And you start to think, you know, if there's a way that you could turn those surfaces into solar energy harvesting systems, you could generate a lot of power and you could start really making an impact. And so we've been thinking about these kinds of ideas for a couple of years. We started thinking about these ideas in about 2010. And there was an idea that's been around since the 1970s for this luminescent solar concentrator. And what the reason this was developed in the 70s was because scientists appreciated that solar cells were just too expensive. And so they took this idea and they tried to make solar energy more affordable. And so the basic idea for it is you take a piece of plastic and you embed in that piece of plastic or piece of glass a colorful dye that absorbs a small fraction of the visible light of the solar spectrum. And then it converts that energy into glowing light at another wavelength. So there's this color to these systems because of the absorptive filtering and because of the colorful glow. But that glowing light then gets waveguided or trapped in the plastic, just like a fiber optic. And it guides that energy to the edge of that plate where you mount a very thin strip of your expensive solar cell. And that light is then converted into electricity. And so the luminescent solar concentrator was a way to really lower the cost of these kinds of things. And there was some thought about using these kinds of systems as windows, but they're very colorful and very bright. If I could show you one of them, you know, in your window, if you sit behind it, it's kind of like working in a disco.
Right, not ideal for all business scenes.
So, you know, and at the worst, it kind of makes the room, it makes it look like it's a doomsday. So, you know, what we've really been working on developing is a new way to make these where we can selectively harvest the parts of the solar spectrum that we can't see with our eye, namely the ultraviolet and infrared parts of the solar spectrum, allowing the visible light to pass through. And then these molecules glow at another invisible wavelength, trapping that light and guiding it around the edge. And so because we're not absorbing or glowing visible light, these systems look exceptionally clear and transparent to the eye, just like a typical piece of glass or plastic.
And why is this important to have a transparent luminescent solar concentrator? Where could some of the applications be?
Right. So I think once you realize that you can make devices like this, it actually really sparks the imagination. We have a lot of people that sort of email us on a daily basis with lots of ideas about where they want to integrate these kinds of things. But there's lots of places where you can start to think about deploying this kind of solar harvesting system. Anywhere where there's glass, you know, in windows, in tall buildings and sunroofs, skylights and greenhouses. You can think about integrating them even in mobile electronics to extend the battery life or make them so that, you know, you don't have to plug them in. So you could imagine your cell phone, you no longer have to plug it in. That adds a really great functionality there. You could even think about integrating it into automobiles, whether it's in the windshields and the windows, or even around the siding, because people, when they go to buy a car, they want a certain color car, they want a certain aesthetic car. And so you can put this around the car and still maintain whatever underlying aesthetic you want. And likewise, you could think about integrating this in billboards or any kind of display. So the applications are almost endless. It's really exciting. And so it can really turn our electronics and our cities into solar farms without even knowing that it's there.
And explain the difference between a luminescent solar concentrator and a solar panel that you might see on a neighbor's roof.
So a typical solar panel that you might see on a rooftop, what I would call a traditional solar cell or a traditional panel, is typically made of materials like silicon or gallium arsenide or various other inorganic semiconductors. And in the active material, it's going to absorb the light and convert that light directly into electricity in the active material. In the luminescent solar concentrator, we added an extra step into this. We're going to harvest the light by taking a dye that's going to absorb some fraction of the solar spectrum. It's then going to convert it into a different color or different wavelength of light. And that light gets guided to the edge where it's kind of concentrated. And then we actually mount your traditional solar cell just as a very thin strip around the edge.
And where might we see luminescent solar concentrators in our daily lives today? The opaque ones.
Yeah, the colorful or opaque ones. There aren't too many places that you're going to see them, actually. And this is, you know, one of the reasons is because they're so colorful, it makes them very hard to adopt them sort of in a widespread way. So you may see them in solar farm arrays. You may see some colorful ones. They're trying to deploy them in greenhouses, though it's not entirely clear what impact they have because they change the spectrum and they're colorful. I think that's one of the key parts of our development is actually making this technology highly adoptable. Because you can't see it, you don't even know it's there, you can basically integrate it anywhere. And so that really opens up the markets and opens up completely new functionality, new applications, and I think you can see it everywhere. In fact, we were so excited with the development of these kinds of technologies that we started a company to commercialize this. And the name of that company is Ubiquitous Energy Incorporated. And it's a great name because it really tells you what we want to do, and that is deploy solar energy everywhere, ubiquitously, you not even know that it's there.
And this is a spinoff from your team at Michigan State? Give us a better snapshot of the company.
Yep. So this is a company that I co-founded with some of my colleagues, and they're actually now situated out in Palo Alto in California, or Menlo Park, rather. And They're working. So we've developed a lot of these technologies. They've licensed all the technologies, and they're actually working on scaling it up now, producing it commercial products in a range of different areas. And so, you know, our expectation, our goal is to see these kinds of systems actually be deployed maybe in the next couple of years in a range of different products, whether it's mobile electronics, a variety of different displays or windows. There's a lot of different applications we're looking to target within the next few years.
I'm looking through you. Where did you go? I thought I knew you. What did I know? You don't look different, but you have changed. I'm looking through you. It's soothing, but the words aren't clear. You don't sound different. I've learned the game. I'm looking through you. You're not the same.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Dr. Richard Lunt. He's an assistant professor of chemical engineering and material sciences at Michigan State University. So, Richard, I guess the holy grail for your work is to try to get maximum energy-producing efficiency from these transparent solar cells.
Right.
Explain where you are now and how it compares to current silicon-based solar panels that we might see on rooftop in terms of its efficiency, as well as the LSC, the luminescent solar concentrators.
Sure. That's a really great question. You know, the first interesting part of the answer to that question is, I think, pretty surprising to most people. If you look at the sort of theoretical limit or the maximum efficiency that you could possibly get with an opaque solar cell, it's about 33%. And if you cut out all of the visible light, the maximum efficiency you can get is around 21%. So that just kind of puts in perspective sort of the limits that you can get. There are ways to actually go around that with these, what we call multi-junction cells, but for one junction, you can go to about 21%. A typical solar panel that you might buy for, let's say, your roof, made out of silicon, will typically be about 15% efficient. The best luminescent solar concentrator ever made is about 7%. And the devices that we're making now are in the 1% to 2% range, but we expect to get closer to that 7% efficiency for the opaque and the colorful ones, but while making it completely clear and transparent.
And do you have an ideal timeline for trying to attain that goal?
Yeah, so I think we are, you know, constantly making progress every day, and I think we'll see this kind of advancements progress within the next couple of years. I think we'll start to approach those metrics, you know, very quickly, and I think we'll do that within, you know, just a couple of years. So the ways that we're actually working on improving the technology is we are continuing to develop the molecules to glow even more efficiently than they already are. We're also working on, these first prototypes that we've made, they really only absorb a small fraction of the infrared or invisible solar spectrum. And so by developing other molecules that go even deeper and stacking them together or blending them together, we can expand how much of the invisible spectrum we harvest. So that's another important route that we're developing. And lastly, we're working on reducing the amount of interaction between the molecules to really reduce the crosstalk. So the molecules can see themselves, and if they talk to each other, they're going to throw away our energy as heat. And so we try to reduce that. So there are approaches that we're using to reduce that kind of interaction as well. So those are the three main directions that we're really working on to push the performance of these technologies closer to these limits.
At their current levels of 1% or 2%, are there some applications that could still benefit from this invention? And so then where would some of the low-hanging fruit for a Ubiquitous Energy Incorporated be, for example? Where would you maybe first put your toe in the water?
Right. So the answer to that question is yes. That's why we started the company. And, you know, if you look at things like e-readers, smart windows, the energy that's required to power these basically completely autonomously, so you never have to plug them in, is fairly low. And so that those kinds of applications look very appealing. You know, smart windows is a great example because the government is really interested in people adopting this kind of technology. It's a technology where you can transition a window between a clear and opaque state. And the reason for wanting to deploy that kind of technology is because it can save buildings a lot of energy in the HVAC system costs, the cooling costs. And so, but one of the challenges to really deploying that technology is that when you try to retrofit an existing building, you have to now think about how are you going to power this thing. You have to pull wires from somewhere. And so by integrating the power supply on board directly in the window with our technology, you can power this thing completely autonomously. You don't need to pull wires from anywhere, and it just works on its own. It's a self-contained product. So it really enables other technologies as well. And there's another benefit, which I didn't even really mention, which is that when you integrate these things into buildings alone, they're going to reject a lot of this infrared light, which is something that we would traditionally call solar heat.
Oh, so this will have a cooling effect.
It'll have a cooling effect. And so you can actually save buildings a lot of energy that way. And so cooling is very inefficient. And so any amount of energy that you can save in these HVAC system costs saves a lot of energy in the building. And in fact, there's a sort of passive technology that was developed in the 80s that just rejects or reflects the infrared light. And what we do now is we capture that and basically prevent it from entering the building, but then actually convert it into electricity. So these are sort of multifunctional devices. So they have a lot of different applications where we can integrate them in a variety of different products. I think it's natural to start with sort of smaller products because you often can sell them for greater profit, and you learn the scale up and you learn how to make them bigger. And then you go for the big products and the big markets, you know, tall buildings. And so that's kind of the trajectory that we're on.
SeaChange Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu. This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. I'm speaking to Dr. Richard Lunt. He's an assistant professor of chemical engineering and material sciences at Michigan State University. So Richard, even at this 1 or 2% efficiency level, if we did extrapolate this into much larger scale rollouts like a skyscraper.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tremendous amount of energy we're talking about. But I guess one of the big challenges then would be connecting that to a grid. Would it just be as simple as what we already have with smart windows, or would it be much more difficult to try to take these windows and turn them into energy producers?
Right. So I think there are a number of different approaches to utilizing that energy effectively. You know, one of the benefits with generating electricity closer to where we use it is that we waste about half of our energy that we produce just in transporting it from power plants to the places where we actually use it.
Right.
So we already save a lot of energy by generating locally. But there are a number of different ways that we can think about utilizing this energy. So you can think about tying it into, if you have a newer building that is, you know, prepared to have this integrate directly into it, you could have it tie into the grid directly. Or you could think about utilizing the power more locally in each room. So you could have either tie-ins to the local power in the room, or even just outlets directly around maybe the window frame. So there are a number of different ways that you can actually think about utilizing this energy. You can use it to maybe power some other technology like the smart window, or in mobile electronics, you're going to throw the energy just directly back into the power system, into the battery system to recharge it. So there are a lot of different ways to really think about doing this. And it's really a question of maybe the application.
And give us an idea of the competitive landscape of this area. I imagine you have certain patents, but are there other organizations, countries, universities that are working on developing these things?
So I think we've really pioneered this kind of technology. We were really the first to identify that this was something that would be really exciting and really develop the first prototypes for it. But that being said, there's sort of a long history of companies that have been working on what I would call semi-transparent solar cells, where you can't really see through them very well, or they're very colored. And we had seen a lot of companies trying to bring those kinds of devices to market, and people were just not really interested in buying them. And so if you think about it, it's sort of like, why are certain electronics companies successful? Why has Apple been successful? They weren't the first to make an MP3 player, but maybe they made it or sexier or easier to use. And so, I think in the same way, we're taking these kinds of solar cells and really making them very aesthetically pleasing, because you don't even necessarily know that they're there. And so clarity and transparency are actually very key criteria. And so it's a very different approach that we really took. We built that in from the ground up in this technology. And that's something that is really unique. And so Ubiquitous Energy is really the first company to really commercialize a product like this.
And in the United States, rooftop solar is not usually something that people consider unsightly. That's generally not one of the downsides of it. It's almost a badge of honor, and people
right.
know that you spent some money and that you care about the environment, but that's not necessarily the case everywhere. I know, for example, in France, there are several communities there, in Bordeaux, France, for example, where you can't set up rooftop solar within 300 meters of a church, which is pretty much everywhere in Bordeaux. There's a lot of churches. Do you see these LSC transparent cells ultimately replacing rooftop solar on a residential level?
Yeah. No, I think it's a great question. I think in some cases it could, particularly where people are interested in getting a lot more natural lighting into their environment. So if they're looking at installing or integrating skylights, for example, that's becoming more popular in architecture. I think in those areas, this is one of the places where you could think about integrating this. Ultimately, I think it'll be a balance of the two. And I see these as being actually very complementary. So I think in some places you'll see, the rooftop solar being installed, and anywhere where the rooftop solar has already been installed, you have all the subsystems you need. You can think about integrating these transparent solar harvesting systems around the rest of the house, and in the windows and skylights and anywhere else. So I actually see these technologies as potentially being deployed sort of synergistically to make every surface power producing.
It was a curse, soon turned out her heart of glass. Seemed like the real thing, only to find much mistrust, love gone behind. Once I had a love and it was divine, soon found out I was losing my mind. Seemed like the real thing, but I was so blind. Much to mistrust, love gone behind. In between, what I found is pleasing and I'm feeling fine. Love is so confusing, there's no peace of mind. If I fear I'm losing you, it's just...
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Dr. Richard Lunt. He's an assistant professor of chemical engineering and material sciences at Michigan State University. So, Richard, can you bring us back to your lab or the light bulb moment you had, or you and your team had, where you realized that this could be possible?
So I think this is, you know, sometimes there are these light bulb moments. I think in this case, this has been a slow progression, an evolution of thinking about the idea and trying to think about ways to actually make it happen. And it sort of happens in small steps here and there. We've had a lot of little victories along the way. So it's hard to pinpoint one precise moment. This is how science generally happens. There's a lot of sort of, I think the idea, the spark, was always there. I think once,
there was no, you weren't flying a kite and with a key on it and, chopping down a cherry tree or anything apocryphal like that.
No, not that I can really point to, unfortunately. I'm sorry to bore.
So this is very exciting technology, but are we going to be seeing skyscrapers outfitted in energy-producing solar windows in the next decade? Can you give us a best-case timeline for seeing this rolled out?
So I'll tell you, you know, the future is difficult to predict, but solar energy will surely play a part. And we see this technology as being a very key tool that can be used in the Green Engineer's Toolbox to solve a lot of these renewable energy problems. And I think we definitely will see these kinds of technologies deployed within the next decade. So I'd say the future is very bright, not only for solar, but for these new kinds of materials and these new kinds of devices. It's very exciting.
Richard Lunt, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Chris Joss, The Beatles, The Police, and Nouvelle Vague. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.